What up? We are back. We have missed about a week. We missed two episodes, but you know what? Everybody takes a breather. I was in Kentucky. Javi was just looking pretty in Argentina doing his thing, but we are back. When we are diving heavy into beverages today, Javi, I'm excited. Yep. We are touching big on the beverage market. I'm excited to get some insights from two executives in the space. But with that said, AT, start us off.
Let's go.
That doesn't pump you up. I don't know what planet you are on. Javi, what's up, my brother?
I love that shot of us in the intro where we're both like laughing. It's a nice
I mean, we have fun here.
AT!
We have fun on this show. AT, you're the bomb. You know what? You're the bomb too, Javi. We get to interview such cool people on the show, but I love starting off with a quick update of everything that's happening in the space with the brain of Javier Haas. Javi, what's going on in your mind, man? What are you looking at?
A bunch. You'll be happy to know that today I do want to talk earnings a little bit. Not that I'm a fan of earnings, but we had two very interesting reports, one very good and one very bad, both in major exchanges out of Canada. One was High Tide and one was Aurora. Can you guess which one was the great one and which one was the terrible one?
I mean, I can make cases for both to be good. Like High Tide has always been on the uppity up, you know, since we started covering them. Aurora has been trending the right direction recently. Who's been good? Who's been bad? I'm going to say High Tide was a good one. Let me go with them.
HITI, they reported second quarter earnings, record numbers, revenue of 88.5 million US, up 46% year over year, a flat quarter over quarter, which is not a bad thing to see right now. They remain on track to achieving their goals for the year 2023. Very small net loss of 1.6 million Canadian, which was relatively low. And adjusted EBITDA was positive at 6.6 million Canadian.
Did you see there was a do you see the Canadian stocks yesterday? We're just going to go right into it. High Tide was the only one that really stayed in the green for most of the day.
They reported after the market closed. So to be fair as well, like they didn't get that earnings spike that they would have if they reported in at the beginning of the day. Today they're up 0.4%, but they started the day up with like a very nice surge in stock price.
It was, but like looking at this chart, Organigram, Kronos, Sundial, Hexo, Tilray, CGC, Village Farms, Aurora were all down pretty significantly. Only one of those, Kronos, was down less than 2%. Everyone else was down at least 4% or more. And then High Tide was sitting there in the green. I guess people were anticipating some good earnings.
Do you think Aurora had anything to do? I want to shout out our writer Vuk, who dissected the Aurora earnings. There wasn't a lot in the filings. You had to dig deep to understand what was going on. They did report only 9 months for fiscal year 2023, but revenue fell from, or not revenue, profit, I think was, profit fell from like 21 million Canadian last year to under 100,000 in the 9 months for 2023. Again, granted, they had 3 months less in that calendar or fiscal year versus the prior one. 96% down is.
Yeah, that's a pretty heavy drop, even without those 3 months. Anyways, Javi, what else is on your mind, man? We're looking at High Tide. You're looking at Aurora. Aurora is not doing, not a great report, not trending the way they were. High Tide, somewhat of a good report, kind of in the middle, but better than most. What else is on your mind, man?
Let's do a rapid fire. Very nice feature on Matka Films. Very, very cool company doing like visuals and photography and marketing for cannabis companies. Go check it out at benzinga.com/cannabis after the show. Joe Rogan and Bo Hunter Cameron Haynes launched a new line of cannabis beverages called Elk Blood. There is no actual blood in the drinks, just in case you're wondering.
I was really hoping to drink elk's blood. We have some beverage makers on. I'm going to ask them if they can help us out with that. I do want to get their sense on Joe Rogan jumping into this. Is this a CBD beverage or a THC beverage?
I think it's a CBD beverage.
CBD right beverage?
Right. Yeah. Killcliff is usually that. A new product called High Be Gone promises to bring you down if you're too high. And a Benzinga exclusive, the cannabis vape leader PAX, which I'm sure most of you are familiar with, launched its live rosin gummies, diving into the edibles market for the first time ever.
Can I just ask why?
Why not?
I mean, have you covered the cannabis industry recently?
Yeah. I think like demand is still there, and like some of these companies that are well known and well respected, right? Think of PAX, right? Its whole ethos revolves around non-combustion, right? Consuming cannabis in healthier ways. So I see it as a natural extension of what they do. They were already doing their pods for the PAX era. They were doing these pre-fillable pods, like the flower, ground flower for the PAX Plus. So
I think it's an interesting time. Maybe that's what I'm getting at. I think it's an interesting time to be an ancillary player in a sense. Yeah, really what most people think of you as, I guess is a better way to say that, and diving further into the plant touching side of life. But they're doing it while not alienating investors, which is impressive. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It's just an interesting storyline, but props to them if they do it successfully.
Right, like you got to keep going. No matter what the market conditions are, you either, you can give up and stagnate and
yeah. But perfect example of this is Bang when they tried to launch their vape line a while back, and it just wasn't what they did.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and they went back to edibles.
Yeah, well, to be fair, I've tried the PAX products, the plant touching side of PAX, and they're pretty great, man. Like, so all right, that is also a factor. I'm not defending PAX at all, but I'm saying
I'm not attacking them. I'm more so just like it's an interesting time to do something that you're not known for, I guess, but at the same time, if they're successful at it, that's awesome. I'm it's not a negative for me. I'm just saying it's an interesting move.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. I agree.
And good stuff that they're making, good gummies, and I guess they don't have to just be peach flavored. Alabama, looking at you, Alabama. Awesome. Hobby, anything else before we jump into our guests, man?
No, let's go. Let's get it. We have two amazing guests today, and we're talking cannabis beverages.
Let's bring on Evan Inneman. He is the CEO of Harmony Craft Beverages in Sands Lane. He's got some great insights for us. Let's bring him on over. Evan, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, guys. How you guys doing?
Doing good, my friend. That is a great backdrop you got there. It's like taking some time to build out.
That's real. look at the entire cannabis beverage thing. He's got the Klaus there. He's got Warren Bobrow's book. He's got some of the Love Your Brain I see back there by the Flaming Lips.
Man. What copies? It's like Hobby's been to your house or something, Evan. Right. Anyways, man, it's good to hear from you. You are a man who is deep into the cannabis bev land. Can you just give us a sense of what you're doing across Sands Lane and Harmony?
Yeah, absolutely. So Sands Lane, and I know we've talked in the past, is really a broad strategic advisor, venture studio, and creative ecosystem. And, we talk broadly about ecosystem. It means that we get involved in projects that we like, whether they are clients or brands that we own and develop and incubate. And the goal is that everyone sort of lifts each other up, and we're very category focused. So in the same vein, we developed and launched Harmony Craft Beverages several years ago to look at beverage as a broad category, all things low and no alcohol. So alcohol removed, not just, non-alcoholic. And then functional and infused beverages. And the goal for that is really to help provide brands and products and really leverage what we can in functional benefits for our society. And beverage is the platform to do that. I say very often, generally not in a public forum, but I wholeheartedly believe that for cannabis to be mainstream, beverage has to be 50% of the market.
Yeah.
I say that because beverage is so integral to every aspect of our life. And we are looking for, broadly as consumers, better for you and functional alternatives. And that's what we're seeing in the overall trends. And that's what we focus on with Harmony Craft Beverages. And one of the aspects there that we just launched recently in line with continuing to build out the ecosystem is our field and trade marketing program. And there are a couple of reasons behind that. Part of it is, you know, you're speaking before about the market conditions and, you know, where things are in California, where things are in new markets, where things are in beverage. And it is really, really difficult to do anything right now. And we all need to be honest with that. One of the biggest constraints we have is capital. The other big constraint we have is access to consumers and in a normal ability to market to converse with consumers who really are, you know, what we are aiming to support is consumer choice, consumer access, the beneficial relationships of beverages for consumers. And those are challenging. So the field of marketing program is field and trade marketing program is really to help brands collectively approach market to leverage their resources better, to be a resource for brands who can come in and work through opportunities like farmers markets, you know, speakeasy style events where people can sample and try and educate, educating retail because beverage is not natural for cannabis retailers. It's not something they know. It's not a high margin product. So if you're thinking about your economics in a, you know, a four wall store, mm-hmm. you got to look at margin right now if that's the cash constraint. So we're active across all these areas, not just in cannabis beverage across the board, but specifically in cannabis beverage. And we're having a lot of fun, as hard as it is. I think at the end of the day, we do this because we're having fun. And we do this because we wholeheartedly believe in what plant medicine and plant access means to people worldwide. I mean, we're basically here in the U.S., but we influence a lot around the world and hopefully in a good way. So we're just having fun. That's what we're doing.
That's awesome.
Why is it so challenging to market, right? I'm just wondering, right? We talk about this a lot on the show, but I'm seeing things change quite a bit, right? Like you can now go to a platform like Benzinga, which reaches like tens of millions of readers every month, and you can advertise and you can do sponsor content, and you can go to Wheat Maps or Leafly or High Times. You can go to Twitter. Granted, you can't really do a lot on Instagram and TikTok, but there are ways around it, right? So like, why is it still so challenging? What exactly is it that remains there as a barrier?
There's a few. I mean, certainly there are ways to market. There are access points that you mentioned. There's always media and press. There's always sponsored content. There's always sponsored events. There's certain aspects of social media that are now open to cannabis beverage marketing. There's also this new dynamic, which is not really new at all, of hemp-derived cannabinoid beverages on market that really do have the perfect share of buzz that you want to have for market for consumers. So that is changing how brands can get to market as well. But there still are some challenges around that digital ecosystem, the messaging, the awareness piece to the transactional piece. And, you know, brands have difficulty paying slotting fees and then also paying for digital marketing overhead and then also building content that costs money. So there are a lot of different variables that go into. There may be access, which only some brands can really truly afford, at the same time having product on shelf, so that all the work that goes into build awareness and education can actually convert to a transaction. Because what has happened for cannabis brands for a really long time, and not just beverages, they've spent a ton of money marketing to an endemic audience, not to a wider audience. So it's more costly, although it's also a higher likelihood of conversion. But you're talking to the same people. So what yeah. thing, and that is a lot of replacement. A new brand comes to market, you're just going to replace it because of, in many ways, the value proposition, which is in retail, is, well, I can get the same dose at a lower price, then that's what I want. I'm not that shopper. I'm not that consumer. A lot of people are not. I care about things very differently than a sort of peak of a moment. So, but that's a challenge. The actual transactional mm-hmm. piece is still a challenge for brands. When you're marketing on certain platforms that are national, but that reach can really only address 5% of that audience in a market you're in, it's not worth the investment to spend the time unless you have unlimited cash, which no one has. And that's really the dynamic, is with the limited capital resources and the constraints we have, given it's cannabis, you have to make every dollar look like 10. That's really the only thing that is going to win for the next, you know, who knows, right? We can't bet on regulations. We've seen that not work for everyone for a really long time. You have to really understand and operate with what's happening today.
Amen.
And that's reality.
Amen, Evan. Let's shout it from the rooftops, man. So, you know, I'm thinking a lot about infrastructure when it comes to beverages and it comes to the B2C and retail side. You know, we had a conversation a while back with Bob Blair from Jones Soda on here, and he was going to provide the refrigerators for these dispensaries to hold Mary Jane, mm-hmm. right? You know, and the refrigerators are not necessarily built in. Now, granted, you know, I think of like White Claw or Bud Light, they don't actually have to be in the refrigerator at the gas station, but they are, mm-hmm. you know, they're more accessible, I guess, more ready to drink when you get home or where your destination is. Is that a hindrance to really the growth of cannabis, is, you know, ready to drink beverages, or are there enough dispensaries in the infrastructure, or with the infrastructure rather, to hold, you know, ready to drink cannabis beverages?
It's a interesting multi-part question and answer technically, because ready to drink is really the category that drives most sales, whether cold, which is really the intent of I'm going to purchase it and bring it to an event, bring it home, have it right now, whether that's water, tea, or, you know, an alcoholic beverage or a functional cannabis beverage or anything else. So that's definitely out there, and that is something that consumers look for. In terms of providing that in dispensaries, it's an interesting question, because are people going into dispensaries looking for cannabis beverages? Possibly, possibly not. So to take up however many square feet, again, thinking about the economics of a retailer right now,
yeah,
a large percentage of your store for a very low margin, and in certain cases, low velocity product, for a retailer, they have to make that work for them, and they have to make an investment in providing value to their customer base, not just products. And there's a difference, and some retailers see it and invest in it. And that's where something like, you know, Bob from Mary Jones will be able to be successful putting in coolers. And, you know, that's awareness. It's like a very simple tool. The more you see something in the in your face, the more you're going to remember it. You have the recall, maybe you'll try it. But retailers have to be open to investing in that conversation with beverage and providing that to their customer, because it's not a profitable financial decision for them right now. It is a profitable investment for them. To me, at least, in the way I view it, a profitable investment for them in their brand and in their customers for long-term retail mm-hmm. growth. So is it a hindrance? Not really. You know, I think the hindrance is getting the message of cannabis beverage to more consumers who are going into retail or using delivery or direct-to-consumer. That's more the hindrance right now.
Interesting.
Because there aren't enough retail doors anyway, and most consumers, percentage-wise, do not go into retail dispensaries. Mm-hmm. I generally, as a consumer, do not go into a retail dispensary. Now, again, I don't look at myself as anything typical or atypical. I'm just one of many, many million, hundreds of millions of people in the US, but there are, you know, cohorts of people that do not go into dispensary who consume. Mm-hmm. So they're getting it through delivery, direct to consumer, a friend, whoever it may be. So the retail portion's only a small portion of it. We know retail in every market's hard. In California, it's an absolute mess. There's a lot more of a mess to come. We all know that. And what does that mean for everyone? Hold on tight, figure it out. Don't stop. And either believe in it or don't. And if you don't, then probably best to exit now.
I have a tough question for you to close it up, but you've mentioned it a few times. Like this, you know, beverages are a low margin product. Most of them are relatively expensive compared to other forms or other form factors. They're also pretty costly to produce. Why is it that beverages are so expensive and so low margin? And what would it take for that to change, right? So that the economics make sense.
Well, that again is a very loaded question with a lot of things to break out there. you know, one part you mentioned earlier, infrastructure. There is very little infrastructure that can support cannabis beverage. Obviously, all the licensing, regulatory compliance side is significant, so that's difficult. Really, really hard to move liquid in cans and bottles. That's just a beverage challenge. It's not a cannabis beverage challenge, but when you have operators that aren't focused and dedicated to beverage in the cannabis space, then that dynamic doesn't really work very well. So that's been something that has increased cost. And in that infrastructure, you know, a lot of these are startups and they don't have unlimited cash. So the cost of producing, whereas you might put, let's say at scale, you know, 12-ounce can beverage in it, you know, 35 cents for cannabis beverages, it might be anywhere from 75 to $1.25. That's huge when you're thinking about what a consumer wants to spend at the shelf for a beverage. You know, $1, $2.50, $5, maybe $8, maybe $10, depending on how premium, if it's functional like alcohol versus not. I think the challenge that is mostly not so much the low margin, the velocity is more of the challenge, and also the consumer understanding of quality consumable products cost money. There's a premium. The same way you're willing to spend that for a beer or a glass of wine or a kombucha, whatever that is. Cannabis is no different. The fact that it has 1 milligram or 25 milligrams, the difference in cost of that milligram is not really what is driving the cost of a product. And that's the thing that people need to understand. If we're using high quality ingredients, all the other elements, different than just having something in a can. So scale will certainly help bring costs down. More infrastructure would help bring costs down, more dedicated and focused operators that can understand how to work within those margins will bring costs down for everyone. And then obviously, you know, the marketing costs, as much as that doesn't go into the can landed, it's a big part of not helping to scale velocity, which would ultimately bring those costs down. So it's complicated. You know, I kind of look at an equation in two ways. There's value extractors and value creators. A lot of what we've seen in the cannabis space over years are value extractors. And what I mean by that is they're taking from brands. They're charging too much for the things that they shouldn't be charging too much for. Mm-hmm. And they're not creating a lot of value other than a technical deliverable. And on the value creation side is really where, you know, we like to spend most of our time and always look to say, how are we creating value? That's not just money. And when you have infrastructure that is charging too much, granted, their position as a startup, they need to charge more. They don't always have to do that. And it sort of reduces the size of the playing field, if you will, the size of the pond, because the more brands we have losing and failing, not to say they're going to be successful long term, the harder it's ever going to be to scale and reduce cost overall. So it's just a function of where we are in the maturity of the market, the maturity of the beverage market, maturity of the brands that are launching in market. Everyone's a startup. Even if you've been around for 8 years, you're a startup. You didn't have rent until now. So,
Evan, it's been really insightful, man. We really appreciate it. We do got to wrap up, but let's continue the conversation down the road. You gave a great part of a great panel of beverages in our Miami event. We hope to have you speaking again with us soon, my friend. But until then, keep up the good fight. Keep creating that value and keep leading the way, man. Appreciate you being here with us.
Thank you, guys.
All right. That was fun. That was a great conversation. Evan Inman of Harmony Craft Beverages and Sands Lane. Appreciate his work in the beverage space. But the conversation is not over today. We are going to bring on the CEO and founder of CQ, one of the original beverages in California, Kenny Morrison. Kenny, what's up, my friend? I got two quick ones to start off for you here. How long have you been around?
You mean born?
When was CQ born?
CQ was born in 2012. Our first venture into I founded a dispensary in 2007 here in Venice Beach, and then sort of pivoted my efforts into branded products, edibles, you know, the CPG side in 2008. And then we made our first beverage in 2010, when Dennis Hopper's nurse came into the dispensary. Oh. Dennis was dying of cancer at the time, and his nurse requested a hot tea. And so I raced out to the manager of the store called me and said, Dennis Hopper's nurse was in here. He wants a tea. He's not doing well. He wants to die with some comfort and dignity. So I raced off to Trader Joe's. I bought some tea. I figured out how to activate it with cannabis, and I delivered it to his front door. And so in 2010, the same month that he passed away, we created Subtle Tea. I couldn't figure out how to make the tea super potent, and I knew Dennis had like a very high tolerance. So I was kind of, it was almost my apologetic name for the product was, this is Subtle Tea, meaning Dennis, it's not going to be super strong, but it's going to be, you know, soothing and give you some relief.
All right. Well, forget the second question. We can't leave this. So you created Subtle Tea. You created a brand and a product in a matter of an hour or two. How was that the grounding of what you did next? What did you do next with that?
You know what? That's interesting that you said that because, you know, honestly, it wasn't an hour or two, but I do like to move at that kind of pace, you know, and fast forward to where I am today is we're pretty much working on licensing models with all our partners in different states. And it allows me to have that same kind of quick reaction time to catering to requests and, you know, running with the ideas that my partners give me in their local state, right? Because whether they're in Illinois or Michigan or Massachusetts or wherever, cannabis is tribal and there's different things that work and different things that win. It's different everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so I've still to this day, that's where my passion is. So it's like, I love fielding those requests. And so we've kind of built out, you know, an interesting product line by doing that.
No, it's super interesting. I was actually, you know, very, very surprised to see how your products vary from state to state, even though they're similar in the form factor. It's like the small bottle, the larger bottle, the can, right? Like you go to California and the average beverage you sell is 10 to 100 milligrams. And in Massachusetts, it's only 5, right? Is that related to regulations or what works in the market, in each market, or both, right?
Well, necessity is the mother of invention, right? Like they're not allowing drinks higher than 5 milligrams in Massachusetts. So therefore we had to cater to what's allowed. But then I think it also creates an interesting thing where we get, you know, outreach from fans in Massachusetts. Oh, wow. I love these drinks. Can you make them stronger? I say, well, can you make your way to, you know, Illinois? And some of the people are traveling and when they visit other states, getting to try out products that aren't local to them or not available in their territory. But yeah, it just sort of goes both ways. It's like everything Evan was talking about. It's so difficult to be profitable and create products with margin sometimes. That, you know, anywhere where we can create a high dose product, we're going to do it because obviously it sells for more money and it has a better margin. And I think, you know, that traditional mindset of, no, I'm going to make the same product everywhere. It's going to be like McDonald's or a Coca-Cola and taste exactly the same. Sure, we want the products to taste the same everywhere. But, you know, Fanta has flavors that are only available, you know, in certain countries, in certain mm-hmm. regions, in certain territories. So I think it makes it fun, but it's also a necessity in order to cater to that market and figure out how to get some value out of being in that market, you know.
Are you going to create a peach beverage in Alabama, Kenny?
I was on a phone call this morning about a peach beverage in the South. We actually, Subtle Tea is being carried by Erewhon now. As just a hemp CBD product in, you know, the health food stores here in Southern California. It's a 10-store chain, Erewhon. And we have a ready-to-drink hemp-derived CBD drink there called Subtle Tea. And one of the flavors is white peach tea.
Phenomenal. So I have a quick question for you in regards to the traction of beverage companies. We just saw Uncle Arnie's. You know, have a crowdfunding round earlier this year. They're raising again. We see, you know, Evan chatting about it really needs to be 50% of the market for cannabis, you know, to be what it can be. What is the traction right now for cannabis beverages with investors, with consumers versus really where it needs to be? Are investors seeing that right now? Are consumers seeing the importance of cannabis beverages? You know, or do we have some catch up to do?
are consumers seeing the importance of cannabis beverages? That is a very fragmented, localized answer, right? I think there's a mismatch when it comes to cannabis beverages at a dispensary. And Evan was sort of talking about this and talking about what it's going to take to get, you know, the dispensary buyer, the dispensary manager, or even the consumer to care. And, you know, one of the things that I heard from one of the more recent entrants to the space, Can, when Luke and Jake were asked, you know, who in cannabis is your competition? Their response was, for me, it was a total eye opener. And I'll admit, like, I come from a very kind of old school cannabis world where I've been conditioned to make high dose beverages to appeal to the existing consumer. You know, they came at it from a very different standpoint, right? Creating 2 milligram drinks that are supposed to be the analog to a glass of wine or a beer. And when they said, you know, we don't see cannabis as our competition, we see alcohol as our competition, it was like, wow, thank God.
Totally agree.
Thank God for some new energy and some new perspectives in the space that like an old dinosaur like me can learn from. I mean, I've always thought that cannabis will one day be a competitor to alcoholic products. It's just not going to happen within the four walls of a dispensary. It's just never going to happen in that venue. I think, you know, the beverage set that we see at a dispensary is always going to be more conservative, more stubborn, less likely to take risks, less likely to bring on an innovative product. It's going to be this small category that the buyer, you know, considers an afterthought, and the fridge is just sort of set it and forget it, right? And then most brands are realizing, wow, I'm not seeing the ROI on giving that dispensary a free fridge, you know, because there's not as much consumer loyalty. Mm-hmm. I think the consumer, you know, pretty much every cannabis consumer today and cannabis buyer today comes from an era pre-brands, like a pre-branded cannabis era, right? And I think that mindset still affects how the consumer purchases. I think it still affects how the buyer purchases. They're still very much thinking in this commodity mindset, and the brands have not yet really taken hold to mean very much. So for a lot of interesting reasons, I think success in cannabev in a dispensary is tortured, and it may continue to be tortured for a long time. Whereas what we're seeing in the hemp space, right, where, you know, the epiphanies that retailers are having today is, wow, you know, I placed Can near the sodas in my bodega and it sold pretty well, but when I put it next to the hard ciders, it started to fly. It's like the thought that, you know, I always look at things in a time capsule, and you know, that epiphany is like historical. It's ridiculously minute. It's going to be like something we chuckle about in 5 years, but people who sell cannabis beverages, hemp derived, in the mainstream channel are still realizing what they're selling is an alcohol alternative. Yeah. Right. It's it's like, it seems obvious to me and others in the space, but it's still not obvious. And in a little, you know, a couple months or a couple years down the road, you know, cannabis beverage is going to seriously be displacing alcohol beverage in mm-hmm. the convenience store and every grocery store and every supermarket, bodega, all of it.
I mean, that's usually like where I get my wine, right? I either get it at the supermarket, you know, like there's some good wine at this point in any supermarket, especially down here in Argentina, or at the restaurant, right? I rarely go to a wine store unless I'm looking for a specific wine, right? It's a type of grape that is not available everywhere, right? So I am completely bullish on the future of cannabis drinks. I am, however, as you've seen earlier in our conversation with Evan, a little bit obsessed with the economics of it all, right? And trying to understand, for instance, I assume your 2 ounce shots, right? They have 100 milligrams of THC. Is that the most profitable product? I assume it is, right? But is it also the most sold product, right? Because I understand that that helps you bring the cost down. It brings transportation costs and everything down. But at the same time, it's not the same experience, right? If you ask me if I was willing to replace my bottle of wine with a shot of wine that you then dilute in water, my answer would probably be no, right? So I would like to understand how all of this works.
To me, a shot isn't even a beverage, all right? A shot is a easy, inexpensive to produce edible.
Okay.
Which translates into an inexpensive to purchase edible for the high dose consumer at a dispensary, right? I think high dose drinks compete with edibles, and low dose drinks compete with alcohol. There is a small subset of consumers who use the shot to dose it out by the capful and make, you know, drinks, whether they're traveling or, you know, they're at a concert or they're at a picnic or whatever. But for the most part, you know, to Evan's point earlier, it's all about RTD, ready to drink. People don't want to prepare, even if that means dosing it out somewhat, you know. We package our shots in a way that conveys how they can be used at low doses, primarily because that's the responsible thing to do. But I don't have hard data on what percentage of the consumer is using them in low doses. And my hunch would be that the majority of people are using them in a high dose, just drinking it all at once. You know, our 100 milligram 16 ounce drink, one of the early bits of feedback we started to get was, wow, could you make this thing smaller? Could you make this thing in maybe, you know, 8 ounces or 12 ounces? I don't want to drink 16 ounces to get my 100 milligrams.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So, you know, what we're doing right now for the most part is appealing to our base, right? And the 80-20 rule, that 80% of your sales are going to come from 20% of your consumers. And it's the bud tender, it's the person with the high tolerance who's sort of our bread and butter at this point in the dispensary channel. So we continue to make products that appeal to them and cater to them. But I'm long on beverage, and I'm a big proponent that it's going to displace alcohol. But in order to get there, like, you know, they've burned $40 million, raised $40 million and burned through it, doing incredible education, bringing incredible awareness to the space. But A, I don't have that budget. And so B, I'm sort of biding my time and waiting a little longer to create the products for the hemp channel that will be considered alcohol alternatives.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kenny, it's been a very insightful discussion, man. I'll leave us with this. I just received some data that CQ is the third largest beverage brand in Illinois, really the capital of, or, you know, the quote unquote capital of corporate cannabis, I would say, outside of California, right? But where are you looking to expand next? What's next for CQ?
That Illinois data is cool. It's impressive considering we've been in market for just 4 months now. And it's also exciting because we've just launched our sodas in Illinois as of the beginning of the month. So about 12 days ago, we launched two SKUs of sodas. And those are really, the Midwest loves their soda. So those are getting great reviews and great uptake.
In the Midwest.
Yeah.
So I think we're
going to keep going.
They're all Cokes where I'm from. I want a Coke. What kind?
Right.
That's all Cokes anyway.
I think we'll keep rising in the ranks in Illinois because we're just getting started there. We launch in Michigan in like 2-3 weeks, about 3 weeks away from launch in Michigan. We're launching with shots, and then we'll be doing a 200 milligram syrup there. And then eventually we'll be launching sodas there as well.
Awesome, man. Well, congrats on the rapid growth that's about to come up. I mean, you guys are really moving forward strong. You're creating some great awareness. You're doing it in a really interesting, it sounds like, hyper-localized way. So that is just more work, but more, I think, payoff in the end for you guys. It. You know, yeah. So props to you, Kenny, and keep it up, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, you guys.
All right. Thanks, Kenny. And thanks again to Evan. It's been a very insightful chat about beverages. I have one fun fact for you, Javi, but anything about, you know, the beverage discussion today that you want to point out?
I mean, for people watching, go check out CQ Beverages and stay tuned. Stay alert. I heard on June 22nd, the Flame Elixir weighing coin will reveal a new line of adaptogenic mushrooms and hemp gummies under the Love Your Brain brand as well. So shout out to brands from our two guests today.
Nice. Nice job, Evan. Awesome, Kenny. I did just want to point out we are officially up, thanks to all of our listeners and everybody who supports us, as the 8th rated cannabis podcast per FeedSpot. So that is thanks to Javier and his news desk. That is thanks to all of our listeners. Appreciate you guys for always tuning in. What?
I said vote us up.
Vote us up. There you go. Vote us up. Again, it's all thanks to the guests bringing their insights to us. Javi, you're the man. We're going to hop off. We're way over time, but thank you guys for sticking with us. We will see you again on Tuesday at 1 Eastern time. Peace.